Welcome.
Hello, good
Landia.
afternoon, Mr. Hello,
Yes,
good
good
afternoon.
afternoon.
Mr. Ellis, glad to
Yes,
hear
good
you.
afternoon.
Glad to hear you, and many blessings on your retirement.
Thank
I
you very
want
much.
To look at the whole idea of going paperless and doing everything online electronically. Now, I want us to also look at the lessons, good and bad, and what we would have learned from the COVID. Now, I heard the president of the BCC, that's the Barbados Chamber of Commerce, talking about brick-and-mortar transactions as it relates to banking and doing certain business transactions. I guess she was making a greater point about doing things more online and weaning Barbados off of doing the face-to-face transactions. Now, I want to say this. While I support the technology and find that in some ways the technology can make things more efficient, there is a reality that we need to consider. What do we do when the technology fails? When there's a total blockout? When our systems get corrupt and become ineffective and inoperable? What do we do? What backup do we have? Now, I do not and will never support a paperless society, nor going to convert to doing things fully online. I think that there's room for both to exist, and there's something about having your bills in hand, especially to keep track of things in case anything goes wrong. Now, even if I have my bills and my receipts online and something goes wrong, I still have to print those bills to have some traceable records of what I need to do. So you need paper. Now, one of the things that the COVID should have taught us is that online teaching is not all that it has been made out to be. In some cases, it is highly impractical, especially for children and even for some adults, depending on what course they're doing or teaching. Now, buildings were built to house offices that people go to work in. These buildings pay utilities and they accommodate staff, which means that the employer, to some extent, can monitor the productivity of the worker. Now, if we encourage more people to work from at home, it means we're going to have a lot of empty buildings. It means that the people who work from home, chances are, if they don't manage the utilities properly, will have higher utility bills at the end of the day. Are they getting extra money for staying at home to work? Anyhow, I don't think that we can just have a whole lot of empty buildings. They're just unoccupied. Public transport depends on people commuting. Gas stations depend on people moving up and down with their cars to make petrol sales. I am saying, having said all of that, that we need to sit down and think about the ways COVID has instituted changes, the good, the bad, the ugly, the ones that we need to get rid of, and the ones that we can keep. Do you have any comments to make, sir?
I think that we are going to be unable to stop the march towards digital transactions. But I also believe that Barbados needs to do a lot more to reassure the people of this country about the protection of their information and their data. Barbados needs to do a lot more to reassure people about the safety associated with going digital. I'm listening to people who are making it seem as though it is an easy transition.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they are not giving people enough of an understanding of the downside associated with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that works at a variety of levels. One, the government itself, because it gets so much of our information, needs to be able to tell us that that information is protected, and not just tell us.
Right.
Because
demonstrate.
Mm-hmm. People in certain positions believe that all they ever have to do is to come and tell us, oh, this is secure, this is mm-hmm. this is good, and that's all we have to do, take their word for it, rather than being able to prove to us in a more conclusive way that steps have indeed been taken. All right? Then at the business level, companies need to be encouraged to put more resources behind cybersecurity.
That's right. Absolutely.
We need to be training more people. We need to be employing more resources. You see, some of the jobs that are lost in one area can be gained in another. And then at the personal level, a lot of work needs to be done to just sensitize the average person to what needs to be done to try to protect your own information at home. Not enough is being done in that regard. I listened the other day to comments which were made by a Barbadian expert. People can talk about these things from now until eternity. It seems as though there are others in Barbados who believe that silence is golden. they don't have a responsibility, really, to tell the people of Barbados anything. Don't respond to these things. It will just blow over because most people are so ignorant that they are not going to worry about that. That is pie in the sky. But you know what's going to happen? The day that you have a real big issue, a real big loss of data, and it impacts on a lot of people in the country, you will hear a completely different response. I feel very strongly about it. I don't think that we can stop the march. I feel that and wherever possible, I want to go digital as much as possible. But I also know that I have to be involved in backing up. I know that I need to store things in more than one place.
That's right.
All right. All of that is part of the conversation that we must have. And it is not enough. It is not enough for the government to come and tell people all the time, oh, we're switching to this and we're switching to that for convenience sake alone. I agree with the idea of making the move. But bear in mind that we also have this responsibility to deal with the data protection and the cybersecurity issues.
But David, even as a small developing country like Barbados, what you're talking about calls for a lot of resources that we don't necessarily have on hand to use. So in the meantime, what type of approach would suffice in the meantime?
You have to buy, look, this is an era in which you can buy those services from other places. This idea that Barbados must be closed off to the rest of the world and Barbados must be able to solve every problem itself and it must be a Bajan who must be able to do it. I mean, as much as possible, yes. But there are certain services that you have to buy from the rest of the world for your own protection.
And
this morning I did a piece on Sajika's early business. There are about 100 and over 100 countries are currently grappling with a major cyber attack.
Right.
I don't know if Barbados is one, but it is coming out of China. And, you know, it's been something that started apparently earlier this month or something like that. So this is an ongoing fight that we face. And we really need to confront it in a variety of ways.
But I support you on the notion of not going at it alone. Now, CARICOM, at the level of the CARICOM, they had issues like cybercrime and cybersecurity as an issue for foreign policy coordination, as an issue under which we could take joint and collective action on. And so far, it hasn't moved from that stage because we're not hearing a lot about it. And you're quite right. Whoever's responsible for telecommunications and that kind of thing need to have some plan in place that we can speak to the country and allow them to know, look, your business is going to be safe and secure. You don't have to fear. And also have an incremental approach. Know what needs to be online and know what needs to have some sort of paper trail. And it is concerning to just move ahead with e-commerce, move ahead with the digital platforms without the kinds of conversation that you just outlined.
You know what I would advocate? I saw about 2 years ago or so, when in the estimates debate, the experts were taken into the well of the House of Parliament, and they spoke about some of these issues. And I think those people who are working day to day with this particular area, they need to be more involved in in communicating with the public on these matters. It's not enough sometimes to just have a political head talking about that, because
right.
there are some instances where politicians kind of taint the whole message, because you get the impression sometimes that it is all about the political message and about protecting their political hide and that sort of thing. And it comes across with a greater degree of authenticity and credibility when you use the specialists who are involved
to
articulate what the situation is. Maybe that's something that we need to look at a little bit more.
But also, not crossing my final point, I find that depending on who's speaking, which interest group it is, the focus can be so narrow. And even if you belong to, let's say, a group like the Barbados Chamber of Commerce, you got to think broader than just your interest group, because you're going to be making comments in favor of your interest group without thinking about the broader and wider implications. So we need think tanks in this country who don't just think in a narrow perspective or according to their niche area, but think broadly outside the thing so that we can get a complete package or a comprehensive package that can cater to the general society. So I thank you for hearing me, and thanks for the little engagement.
Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. Somebody says here that the politicians are about clueless about what. Let me see what the comment is, where this comment is going. 4341790. Hello, good afternoon. It's 19 minutes after midday. Welcome to the Brass Tacks. This is the Friday edition of the program. I'm going until 2 o'clock. Somebody agrees here with the idea that you need to watch how many buildings are going to be left vacant. You know, if you look at government alone, I'm not so sure that's a bad thing. The number of government buildings that are vacant right now and have been left derelict and that sort of thing, the amount of money that is spent by government renting, I accept and agree that one would have to work out some kind of framework for dealing with things like costs associated with people working from home. That cost is shifted from the company because you are in a building and you pay for the utilities and that sort of thing in the company building. And now it shifts from there to the individual. All of those are things that it can work out and have to be addressed. But I am also more supportive of people working remotely than some people are. Some people in the management process have a view that you get more productivity. Do they discuss it in terms of productivity? It is better to have a person working in the office than to have them working from home. You don't pay attention to it. And there's just a hunch that the guy that you see driving to the supermarket or something in the time that they really should have been at work, that person is cheating you in that way. But what happens when that person works late into the night because it's convenient to do that? All of that needs to be taken into consideration. And at the end of the day, I believe that those who manage are going to be challenged to monitor performance, whether that person is in the office or working from home. Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Hello, Mr. Harris.
Hi.
Hi, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm well, and you?
Hanging in. So just quickly, I want to raise two matters quickly with you. I think last year I would have spoken to you about an issue that I was confronted with. I haven't had any closure to it as yet, because if I bring a matter to the table on this program and I have closure, I will come and speak to it. But I haven't had closure to that particular matter. But what I wanted to raise is, because I find it quite interesting, the behavior of the Senator Franklin. And why I say that, I wanted to find out if he's ahead of the party or the party is really far behind him. Or if the political system have changed now where, you know, people in those positions can go ahead of the institution and make statements and do what they want to do
Such as?
Somehow.
But he's where do you believe that he's? Do you believe that he's in conflict with his organization?
Well, I don't know. That's what I'm trying to find out, because sometimes he makes some statements and the organization don't have a
example.
Comment, display threat. I mean, like this recent threat to take the government, not they have a problem with it, taking the prime minister and the attorney general to get this to court as part of the COVID.
In what capacity issue. Did he do so?
But
did he do so? Hold on. He said, well, listen to him. He said he did it as an individual. He didn't say that he did it as a member of the party that he belongs to. He didn't even say that he did it as a trade unionist.
Mm-hmm.
He said he exercised his right as an individual because it impacts on him as an individual.
But maybe that's the part I did not pick up on, because I was more looking at the point is that he's a senator, and I thought the institution would fight the battle in that kind of way, and not him personally fighting the battle.
But I don't understand why you believe that he can't fight the matter as an individual.
I never said, I never said I don't believe that he can't fight it as an individual. I never said that.
Okay.
I just wanted to be clear on that. But if you're saying that, I will go back and read his article and try to find out that where that I went wrong.
When I heard him speak about it yesterday, that is the context in which I heard him address it.
And I didn't hear him yesterday. Yeah. All right. So I thought I would just call actually Reza, because I was just wondering, because I know years ago you work with the institution that you're part of, where you get more strength to get these things done. But if that's an individual thing, then I don't have a problem with it.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
Yes, sir. Thanks for calling. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks. 24 minutes after midday. What's on your mind? Let's talk before we go to the news. Hello.
Hello, good afternoon.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, good afternoon. I'd just like to quickly mention some points, or a point. I was thinking over this whole idea of teachers being burnt out, and I have the utmost respect for teachers. But I feel as though sometimes when we have these discussions that we don't unpack things like what is burnout and why are teachers even burnt out. And when you actually look at the causes of burnout, you really have to ask yourself if most Barbadians in the public service aren't burnt out. And to me, to open up a further discussion about are teachers really getting the support that they need in the classrooms? And this is not just in online teaching. This is just in general. Are teachers being acknowledged and respected? As because when you look at burnout, these are all the things that lead to burnout on a job. Is there job satisfaction? All of those things.
Are you a teacher?
I'm not a teacher. No, I'm not. But I have a lot of sympathy for teachers because it's not an easy task. And I think in general across the board in Barbados that we expect a lot of our people, and we put systems in place, but we don't look at the people as the ones who are behind the systems and driving the systems. And it's kind of like a callous, cold way of just blanketing and looking at systems and not looking at, okay, how are these people actually going to be able to carry out and carry these systems?
That happened in your job?
No, it has not happened. If I am burnt out, maybe.
Well, if
I would say that I have a spiritual foundation, and that I rely a lot on just being inspired by what I do and being inspired by helping people. I think that's where I get my satisfaction. I certainly don't do it for monetary reasons.
You're self-motivated.
Yes, exactly. But that's only one piece of it. You still have to survive. You still have to feel that level of job satisfaction. You still have to feel that ability to be able to provide for yourself, to be
so what do we need to put in place?
What do I need to put in place?
What do we need to put in place to achieve that? Yes.
I think that we the unions start the discussions, but there's need for deeper discussions in terms of understanding what people really need to get a job and to perform on a job satisfactorily. So for example, you have people at home under COVID teaching classes online, but they also have their children to take care of. You know, they also have other members in the family that they may have to take care of, not only teachers, but also caretakers. So we don't bring one person. We bring multiple roles and multitudes to a job. And I feel like that's not what is considered.
Well, you know, we could apply these principles to jobs across the board. This is the continuation of Down to Brass Tacks. I wonder if Dennis saw this document here. I got here this report, Chancellor's Committee report for UE. It's important for us. UE is a very significant institution within this region and in this country. Therefore, just a little piece here I will share with you. It said the review of the university's corporate governance system reveals serious challenges. The university's own documentation shows that many of these challenges have been discussed over the years and that recommendations have been made to address them. However, such recommendations, even when accepted and approved, are not always implemented. The Commission found itself significantly aligned to views expressed in the University Management Audit Department report of 2019, which identified weaknesses in the university's corporate governance system, including A, potential conflict of interest arising from the chairmanship by the vice chancellor at the regional level and campus principals at the campus level of many layers of committees, which report ultimately to decision-making committees also chaired by the vice-chancellor and campus principals. B, a weak and under-resourced risk management system. C, the absence of a whistleblower policy. And D, chronic absenteeism at the meetings of key governance bodies, such as the Finance and General Purposes Committees at both the regional and campus levels. Additional concerns raised before the Commission during consultations with the broader university and external community included A, ill-structured meeting agendas and inadequate scrutiny and discussion of issues by key decision-making bodies. B, no or insufficient assessment of financial impact and risk in decision-making. C, approval of a strategic plan without adequate financial and other resources allocated for the accomplishment of initiatives in the plan, even on the basis of priorities. D, absence of performance metrics against which the achievement of strategic goals can be measured. This is the University of the West Indies we're talking about, okay? E, lack of accountability by managers who often take no action with respect to poor performance, adverse decisions against, or improper behavior of those supervised. F, failure to consistently observe or enforce ethical guidelines as contained, for example, in the Statement of Principles and Code of Ethics. G, inadequate safeguards against expenditure by administrators over limits of expenditure approved by or on behalf of the council. H, lack of clarity as to the procedures for authorizing the engagement by university entities and personnel in businesses and business arrangements. I, gaps in the management of human resources that are of deep concern to staff, ranging from administrative missteps and inefficiencies to deep trust issues regarding the consistency and transparency in the decision-making processes relating to staff matters. Only two more. J, weaknesses in student services that do not exemplify the commitment to student success expected of a regional university whose elemental remit is the cultivation of the ideal Caribbean person, and K, other fault points in communication and marketing and in IT that point directly to lapses in governance oversight in the institution. Now, Dennis, that's the University of the West Indies, and of just a portion of what we have heard from this particular commission that has been looking at it. What, you ever heard of any of this before?
No, David, and certainly not at that level. I read some of the things that you pointed out, and I had a good laugh, and then I had a cup of tea, and I tried to figure out whether to laugh or cry. David, let me ask this question. Who set up the Governance Council for the University of the West Indies, and who is responsible for appointments and making sure that this council works? That's the first thing. Secondly, is this the only CARICOM institution that we have this problem with? I know the answer to that, but you could give me if you feel like it. And three, if this is the epitome of what we're supposed to produce for our best and brightest, you see why we're in the mess we're in at the domestic level? Because no. It says to me that we have a problem with governance. We have a problem with setting up institutions that are accountable to someone, that we hold them responsible, that we have a system that works. You look at LEAT. We have a problem with the LEAT pilots that going on. We got CXC. We got the UE. I mean, David, come on. Myself reported to myself and conflicts of interest. Governed by whom? And we have all these. How many prime ministers in the Caribbean went to UE? How many ministers of government went to UE? An institution for how long?
Well, I think you've got to get behind the factors that have influenced the assessment that has been made there. Mm-hmm. You know, this kind of report would naturally require... Well, I wouldn't just call it politics. I would just say that once that kind of assessment is given, those who are in charge would certainly be expected to express an opinion as to whether they agree, one, and two, if they do, what are the factors that would have influenced that kind of situation? You ask who is responsible for making sure that things are done. That's an interesting question, because many of those people are products of the same university. And to some extent, the people associated with UE may very well have to ask questions about the extent to which that kind of relationship may be viewed by some as incestuous and tends to stop people from calling a spade a spade. All of that is at work. But I told you, there's a lot that's being said across the region. If you go, I think the other day we had a piece out of the Jamaica Observer or the Jamaica Gleaner newspaper. People are looking at this, and this may well be a very opportune moment to try to put right some of the things that have been identified as being in need of positive change. This institution is too important in this region to remain as is if this assessment is a valid one.